Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 ray@rte.ie. We missed Conor Pope yesterday. He wasn't available to us, but he's mentioned in dispatches in the letters page of the Irish Times today. A letter from Brian McArdle, Leixlip, County Kildare. He says, Acara, given the stated failures of Comreg, Fáilte Ireland and the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission to protect Irish consumers, and the success of Pricewatch in resolving seemingly intractable issues, perhaps we need to appoint Conor Pope to a new government-backed consumer advocate position with dictatorial powers. It's Misha, Ryan McArdle. We've said it to him so many times. You should be in government, Conor. We say it to him on a regular basis, Brian. But there it is in print now, the letters page of the Irish Times today. How are you? How are you dealing with the weather? It's all over the place. You wouldn't know what to be wearing. It's windy and it's warm and it's wet. And you know, you're putting on a jacket and then you're too warm and you're not bringing the rain gear and then it rains and you're wet and it's confusing. It's confusing. Anyway, Bridie has been on to us, not about the weather, about something else, to ray@rte.ie. You mentioned on your show yesterday that the creator of Wordle was proving hard to get for an interview. Yes, we've tried him over 20 times, Bridie, and still, no. Anyway, as you were interested in this game, I thought I would let you know about a new game that my son Stephen has created. It's called Faestl. F-A-C-E-D-L-E. You see, Wordle, Faestl, yeah? And it has been available to play for the past 2 weeks. Faestl is a game that requires the player to guess the celebrity face that is revealed with each guess. Check it out today and see if you can guess who it is. I would love if you could give it a mention on your show. I listen to you every day when I'm out for a walk. I love how varied the topics are. Thanks, Bridie. I've tried Faestl. I eventually got it. I think on my fifth guess. So it's a pixelated picture of a famous person. And there's about three or four little squares revealed at the beginning. And then as you guess and you get it wrong, more and more of the face reveals itself to you. Until eventually, if you don't get it in six attempts, it tells you who it is. Or you get it, and that's the way it works. So, Faestl, bit of crack to add to your hurdle and your wordle. So you get up in the morning, and you do your wordle and your Faestl and your hurdle, and you're all over the place. That's Bridie Curran. Thanks, Bridie. Isn't that brilliant that Stephen did that? Hopefully it works out well for him. Orla Fallon has been on. She says, can I please play a birthday request on Tuesday 24th, that's today, for an invaluable and much-loved sister, Roisin Molloy from Cara Naas, County Kildare, but now living in Leopardstown, County Dublin. Her two sisters would be lost without her. She is some sea swimmer, non-panicker, chatterer, gossiper, reader, know-it-all. We love her. There's a book in her, Ray, from training in St. Vincent's Private to delivering babies in Hollis Street to never being without a plastic bag and always having time for a chat. She sounds amazing. Thanks, Roisin, says her sisters Orla and Mary and her mam Una. And they all say, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. What would you say is the biggest lie stroke fib that partners tell to their partners? What would you say? Is it about infidelity? Is it about domestic chores? I'll tell you what it's about. It's about the cost of things. Oh, that's a lovely new top. Yeah, I got it in the sales. It was a bargain. Yeah, bargain. It used to be 120. Got it for 50 euro. That's that top. Lovely, isn't it? Bargain. It was a bargain. I always cut a few quid off as well. You know, around great 100. About that was, you know, a new microphone or something. About 100. Got about 100. Now it could have been closer to 200, but 100 was in the cost of it or in the price of it. It just might have been 170, but 100. So I'm not my own. A lot of people tell their partners fibs about the cost of things. So it's if that's all you're telling lies about, it's harmless enough, isn't it? I think it is harmless enough. Another thing people tell lies about is liking other people's food. Well, that's just good manners. You know, particularly if you're invited to somebody's house and they put the effort into making you something, you're hardly going to go, your pork was undercooked. Well, that's dangerous. That's a health thing, isn't it, if your pork is undercooked? But, you know, you're hardly going to say, your prawns were a bit bland, or your pasta is a little bit harder than al dente, you're not going to say any of that stuff. You're just going, oh, lovely, delicious. What you do with that? You must give me your recipe. Delicious, delicious, delicious. And the other thing people tell their partners lies about is pretending to like their group of friends. Yeah, it's there's a lot of compromising there, isn't there? And then eventually, if you spend enough time with your partner, you iron out all those compromises and you begin to say, do, think, eat the same things. That's the goal, isn't it? You start off and you're different people, independent of each other. And then within 20, 30 years, you're saying you're finishing each other's sentences. You're eating the same food, have the same opinions. That's it. Brilliant. It doesn't work like that at all, but sometimes it does. Did you hear there is an ash shortage? Which is a concern for hurley makers. Yeah, come on, come on, come on. Hurley makers. And what they've turned to is bamboo. This is a great story. Hurling brand Torpy released their bamboo, spelt with a U, FUD as opposed to an OO, range back 2 years ago in 2020, after extensive research into creating a more cost-effective and eco-friendlier product. The hurls, or hurleys, aren't just better for the environment, but they even argue to be more durable than their ash-based competitor. Clare senior hurler Shaden Amori said, I've had the same bamboo hurley for 2.5 years now, whereas before I could go through 6 or 7 ash hurleys in a season. So we might have to find a new name for the clash of the ash. Any ideas, please? Roisin came up with Roo-Hoo Bamboo. I don't know what Roo-Hoo means. Bamboo, aboo. But that doesn't mean clash, does it? Bamboo, aboo. That's just a sort of a call to arms. Which would be good. You'd be cheering them on. Bamboo, aboo. Slucas is a clash. Slucas, bamboo. I don't know if that's going to work either. Anyway, if you've anything that will work to replace the clash of the ash now that people are making hurleys out of bamboos, please, 51551. ray@rte.ie. Still on the GAA and sort of odd uses for GAA apparel and that sort of thing. Ron Nogara has called on the Cork company Micro Sports Gear for help in this weekend's Heineken Cup final. He's the director of rugby at La Rochelle, and they're taking on Leinster this Saturday in Marseille in the European Cup final. And one of La Rochelle's players, scrum half Tuareg Kerr-Barlow, broke his hand in La Rochelle semi-final with Racing. He's quoted as saying, I need to get some hurling advice and try and get one of those micro gloves. So we'll see what we can do with that. I mean, you've got to explore every possibility. You see, if you follow rugby, you'll know that scrum half is a very important player on the pitch. And of course, his pass is all about wrist action and strong hands. So they're trying to get him these gloves that are used in hurling to see if it'll, allow him to play. Depending on his pain threshold, says Ron Nogara, depending on his grip of the ball and depending on, the legality of it, I think it's okay. People have played with those hurling gloves in the past. We just have to wait and see with that. So we got on to Thomas Murray. He's assistant manager with Micro Sports Gear, who make the gloves, who told us they're delighted that they might be representing Cork in the European Cup final. Thomas told us that they sent out the gloves today so that La Rochelle could try them out. Their gloves have been worn by rugby players in the past, including Andrew Trimble and Fergus McFadden. So there you go. They sent out the short-fingered glove to Kerr Barlow. So hopefully it does the job for him. Well, no, maybe not if you're a Leinster fan. And I'm wondering, is that Ron Nogara just doing the psychology thing on it? I see he's writing about Johnny Sexton in the Irish Times today. That's probably strategy as well. Or maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Ray, the big lie is I only had 2 pints. Yeah. The weatherman said there would be heavy showers and sunny periods. What they didn't say was that both would happen at the same time, says Frank. I remember overhearing a conversation in Coote Hall, which is on the Shannon, down in, I think it's Leitrim. Somebody will correct me now. It could be Roscommon, but I think it's Leitrim. And there's a group of lads gathered at the bar, 8 o'clock in the evening, summer's evening. And one lad said, I believe it's going to be dry between the showers tomorrow. And all the other lads just nodded in agreement, very serious faces. Yeah, Mick, you're right. It will be dry between the showers tomorrow. Bag o' the bamboo, says somebody else. And Rula Bamboola. That's not bad. Rula Bamboola isn't bad. The brew-hoo with the bamboo, says Regina. And how about the bamboo bash? They're all good. Thanks, Albie. Very, very bright people. Siobhan says, I also fib about the quantity of shoes and dresses I buy. So when the hubby says, is that new? Or when did you get that? I say, sure, you know me and finding things I forgot about. Please say happy birthday to the hubby, Dan in Fitzgerald's Butchers, Pier Square from Oi for tomorrow. Fib out of the bag now, haha, says Siobhan. There you go. 5 on 551 radio.rte.ie. I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment. But first, bit of this. Hello, hello, hello. We'll try again. A bit of this. Thank you. Thank you. Jamiroquai. Where is he now? Virtual Insanity. That featured on Derry Girls last week. That's what put it into my head. Sounds good on the radio. Sounds good on the radio. So, the ash is to be replaced by the bamboo. So the clash of the ash will be replaced by what is the question today? Didn't mean to make it a question, but it's turned into a question. The bang of the boo for the Hurleys made of bamboo, says Eamon. So you have to put these phrases into the mouths of Gerard Canning and Marty Morrissey and see how they'd sound, you know, in your head. You know, it's All Ireland final day, Tipperary versus, well, it won't be Tipperary, will it now? You know, Kilkenny versus, no, it won't be Kilkenny. Anyway, whoever's taking on whoever. You could say, wham bamboo, says Annette. The belt of the bamboo. Bee bop baloo bamboo, says Vinny. You have to take your time saying that. I don't know if that, in the heat of the moment, if that'd be a good one. The bam of the boo. Slam of the bam, says Maria, who knows nothing about hurling, afraid to say. And how about bamboozled? That could be used in, yeah, that, yeah. Bash bamboo. That's Roisin. Yeah. They're all great. They're all great. And on lies, my daughter was an avid Irish dancer. Every time she needed a new costume, we could never tell her dad what we paid for it. He probably would have had a heart attack, says Marie. Just beginning doing facial. Could you repeat the spelling of it? Sorry, Joanne. Yes. F-A-C-E-D-L-E. So face with a D-L-E at the end. Face with a D-L-E. And it works the same way as Wordle and Hurdle, except for it's a picture of a famous person. Now, let's tell you about our quiz. Our daily quiz, Wheeling in the Airs. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each on clips they will hear, bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize, a great prize this week. It's a two-night break in the Fota Island Resort, which is nestled in the heart of a peaceful island surrounded by gorgeous scenery and just 8 miles from the bustling city of Cork. So it's for two people, breakfast on each morning and dinner on one of the evenings in the Amber Lounge. Loads of things to do in the resort, swimming pool, world-class spa, loads of walks, there's golf, loads of things, and loads of things to do in the vicinity as well. You can find out more at, where is it down there? It's kind of disappeared there, the website address, but I'd say it's photoisland.something. Will you tell me there? It was there yesterday, but it's disappeared today. Anyway, it's a 5-star. We'll give you that website address. And we're looking for photoisland.ie. Photoisland.ie. And we're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock, answer three questions each, and be with a chance of winning that prize. But first, you have to answer our qualifying question, which is this. The Cannes Film Festival is taking place in which European country this week? The Cannes Film Festival is taking place in which European country this week? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 551 ray@rte.ie. Now, back at the end of March, we spoke to Ross Grey native James McManus. He was here in studio telling us about his plans to climb Mount Everest without supplementary oxygen. And if he was successful, it would make him one of 217 people in the world that have managed to achieve that. So it's a very small club. And then more recently, about 4 weeks ago, we spoke to James at base camp. And he described the scene there and the flags and the tents. And he was telling us that his preparations for his attempt to climb Everest was going according to plan. And he told us that he would be attempting it at the end of May. And here we are at the end of May. And James featured in the papers yesterday, and he's on the line now, and he's in hospital in Kathmandu. Hello, James.
Hi, Ray. How's it going?
Good. So things obviously didn't go according to plan. Remind us when you were planning to go to the summit.
Yeah, so the actual plan to reach the summit was for today, the 24th of May. So the last time I was chatting to you, I just finished my second rotation on the mountain. And then I did a third one, moving up to nearly 8,000 metres. And then, which was really successful. Then I took 5 days rest. And then that brought me up to Saturday, when I started moving up from base camp up to camp two. And then we were planning to move up to camp three on Sunday, and then camp four on Monday, and then summit on today. But the weather was too bad. There was winds of between 40 and 100 kilometers an hour from Tuesday right through till the end of this week when the season ended. So unfortunately, we didn't get a window to try and climb the mountain at all.
And will you explain to me again why you plan to leave your attempt to close to the end of the window?
Yeah, it's a good question. And in hindsight, maybe it wasn't the best idea. But basically, when you're climbing without oxygen, right, you're much, much colder. The oxygen keeps you a lot warmer. So you need to go at the end of the season when it's typically a little bit warmer. And the more important reason is that when, like, from the 23rd or 24th on, there's very few people left on the mountain. So if we went at the first window, over 200 people went for the summit on the same time. That was on like the 12th or 13th of May. And the problem there is that I get stuck in a summit queue. And if I was in a summit queue, I wouldn't be moving, so I wouldn't be generating any body heat, and I'd get too cold and I'd have to turn around. So, like, it was a good plan. In hindsight, maybe I should have been ready to go around the 18th, 19th, but, like, you know, the thing about that then is that maybe, you know, that could have been the first window in some years. So it's just really hard to tell, but yeah, so unfortunately the weather caught us out. Like, the thing about it is we could have gone up and tried myself and cheering, but it would have just been reckless and dangerous, and you know, there's no point going up there and telling an epic story of how you got frostbite and this, that and the other and didn't make it. It's just insanity to go up there in those conditions.
I feel very sorry for you, James, because you'd put so much effort into it, months and months of preparation, climbing mountains here, there and everywhere all over the world, and this was, excuse the well-intentioned pun, this was the peak of your achievements, supposedly. And what about your health? Why are you in hospital?
Well, first of all, don't feel too sorry for me, because there's worse things going on in the world. Okay. You know, it's just a mountain, and I'm going to go back and try it again. But thank you. And in regard to my health, yeah, it's basically on my acclimatization rotations, going from base camp to camp two was normally taking me between around 7 hours, slightly less than 7 hours. And when I went up to go for a summit, it took me 12 and a half hours. So I had a complete loss of power and just energy. And I didn't really understand. I'm really concerned as to why. So when we decided to abandon the summit attempt and I came back down to base camp, I went to see a doctor there, and that doctor couldn't figure out what was going on. So I got a heli evacuation to Lukla on Monday, and then I came to Kathmandu today, and they've been running tests on me with a CT scan. And the doctor suspects it's pulmonary edema, which is fluid on the lungs, she also thinks cerebral edema, which is fluid on the brain, but I'm not sure about that one. But we'll see. I'm expecting results in the next hour or two, and that will kind of explain my lack of energy on the mountain. But the treatment for pulmonary edema is to come back down to sea level, which Kathmandu isn't much above, and just to take on fluids and things like that. So it's more really Ray to figure out why I had that lack of energy, because I've been doing a lot of reflecting in the last couple of days, and I actually want to go and climb all of the 14 mountains which are over 8,000 meters in the world without oxygen over the next, you know, however many years. So it's more from a performance perspective, understanding why I didn't perform, because the reality of it is the weather stopped me, but physically I wouldn't have been able to go to the summit anyway for unknown reasons at this moment in time. But hopefully I'll find out over the next couple of days.
Well, the cerebral edema sounds a lot more serious. What do you understand that is?
So that's fluid on the brain, but like my dad in Ross Grey, he's a retired GP, and we were just chatting about it, like, yeah, it's basically like an advanced form of altitude sickness. It's when like you can get fluid in the lungs or fluid on the brain. But the reason the doctor was suspecting that is she was getting me to walk in a straight line, like one foot in front of the other in the hospital, and I was a little bit uneasy. But I don't think I'd be holding a coherent conversation with you or anybody else if I had cerebral edema. So
yeah,
I'm not sure. Maybe we'll see. But I don't think there's a way of testing for that, to be honest, even in a hospital setting. But regardless, it's more, I suppose, like when I came down, it was more of a process of elimination. So I've had a blood test, I had a PCR test to check for COVID, and I've had the CT scan to check for pulmonary edema. Because, you know, even any of your listeners, like, or walk, if they normally, their walk to the shop is like 5 minutes, and suddenly it's taking them 10 minutes and they're out of breath, you know, there's something going on with their health. So I just really, really want to find that out. As I said, I'm planning on coming back and doing more of these huge mountains without oxygen. So
okay,
it's pretty important that I know what's going on.
So in reflecting over the last while, you're determined to make another attempt at Everest without supplementary oxygen.
Yeah, I definitely am. Yeah, for sure. Like I remember the last time I was chatting, you were asking me about why and stuff like that. And like, I think, I don't know, it's maybe not the healthiest thing to compare to others, but my mum, she died when she was 59 of cancer, you know? And she was actually trekking in the Himalayas when she got the diagnosis. And she got the back pain, and then she got the diagnosis in January. And like, she was never ready to die, Ray. She wanted to do more stuff and experience more things and live life to the absolute max. And like, you know, I've a niece in Australia who's got a rare genetic disease, and she's a non-verbal and has trouble walking. So like, you know, you look at people like that and different people in different walks of life, and you're like, Jesus, I'm fit and healthy, and I have the ability to go do these things. So I absolutely have to go do it and live life for the gift that it is, and just experience it to the absolute maximum. And yeah, I love the mountains as well. I just love the feeling of being on expedition and the sense of purpose it gives you. It's absolutely amazing.
So what's the plan now over the next few days, assuming that the tests are going to come back negative and you're healthy enough to travel?
Yeah, so hopefully now I want something to come back positive. I want to be told it's something, rather than not getting an answer, because that would really kind of put a big question mark over coming back and doing these. So yeah, I'm in Kathmandu for a few days, sharing my climbing partner and climbing Sherpa. He's en route, so we are going to celebrate the expedition as a success in what it was, you know. We're going to go for a few beers probably in a couple of days' time if the doctors are okay with that, because it was a really big success. You know, I became friendly with a German climber while I was here. He's a professional climber sponsored by North Face. He's been trying to climb Everest without oxygen for 9 years, and he succeeded this year.
Okay.
So, you know, you got to put it in context to rock up in your first year and think you're on a summit. It's not going to work like that. And you know, all the bits in my control, I did really, really well. So it was a very, very successful expedition. And then I'm back in a couple of days time, and I'm going to take a little bit of time off, maybe go to, I've a music festival or two planned in the next couple of weeks, and then I'll get back to training and start planning for the next big mountain, because there's 14 mountains over 8,000 meters. There's 8 in Nepal, 5 in Pakistan, and 1 in China, and they're all really, really hard. So it's going to be getting my team around me and start planning for those. So yeah, really exciting times ahead.
Just on your team, and when you were talking to us back in March, you said that part of what you wanted to achieve, as well as reaching the summit, was to raise awareness about not really the plight, but the job that Sherpas do.
It's incredible what they do. You know, like they're phenomenal. They fix the rope to the summit for all of us to go. And I think one of the things that people need to be aware of with Sherpa, especially on big mountains, is how dangerous the dynamic is between the client and the Sherpa, because they're instructed by their employers to make their client very, very happy. Is, you know, we would tell our guides in Earth's Edge to make our clients happy as well. But with the level of English they have, sometimes it can get a little bit dangerous, where you have an overly egotistical, ill-informed client who wants to go to the top no matter what. The authority of the Sherpa to tell them no and to turn around is sometimes lacking. Mm. And also, some climbers have no respect for their own life and that of the Sherpa. So Nepal needs to do a little bit more work in how they're regulating the industry and who they're allowing to come and climb the mountain, because it's just sad, the level of human error and lack of respect that's costing lives out here. So but they're amazing people, and as I said to you before, I think anybody thinking about coming to Nepal and going trekking, like, just, or climbing, whatever, it doesn't really matter. It's such a positive thing to do. But just to check that little piece about the welfare of the Sherpa, how they're being treated and how they're being paid, people shouldn't be shy of asking their operator about those things. Mm-hmm. Because they're really, really important, because there's no regulation for them here in Nepal. But amazing people, like, phenomenal, so friendly, and just, they're unbelievable athletes as well. You'd have to see it, like, they're just so powerful and amazing. Yeah, so I love it here. I love Nepal. I love the people. It's just amazing to be here.
James, mind yourself and enjoy the couple of beers with Charing when you get to hook up with them in Kathmandu. And I'm sure we'll be talking again in the future.
Thanks so much, Ray. I really appreciate it, man. Good luck to you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, our next guest is writer, broadcaster, mother, grandmother, wife, 60-year-old woman, cyclist. Well, I keep going.
You forgot to say cat wrangler as well.
Barbara Scully, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Good to see you.
And it's good to be here, thank you.
And now you're author of your first book, which is very exciting.
And kind of nerve-wracking,
Why nerve-wracking?
It wasn't all great crack, but the last bit was kind of great crack. But now I'm aware that now it landed into the hands of people today for the first time, and people are going to start reading it. And, you know, there is that kind of like, oh God, I hope people get it and I hope people enjoy it. I really want people to enjoy it. That's just the main thing.
Right. I think they will. It's called Wise Up, Power, Wisdom and the Older Woman. Barbara Scully, and you'll recognise it because it has an owl.
A sideways owl.
Yes.
A quirky sideways owl.
Which is a sort of an emblem of wisdom.
I think so, yeah. I think so.
So how would you describe it? It's sort of part memoir, part self-help, part...
Exactly. Part opinion and kind of with a dollop of social history and a good few rants and given out bits in there as well. Yeah, it's all of that. So it doesn't fall necessarily into any of those. It's all of that.
All of that. And for people who don't... We spoke to you before when you couldn't get to visit your grandchild down in Australia.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that and on. But for those people who don't know who Barbara Scully is...
Who this incarnation is, yeah. Well, you know, as you said, all of those things that you said at the beginning. But my current incarnation is as a writer, a rent-a-gob. I contribute, you know, occasionally to radio.
Yeah.
And that started about 10 years ago. Again, we were kind of coming out of recession, supposedly, but it had taken quite a toll. And my kids were getting older and I thought, I need to get back to work. I need to start earning some money. And unfortunately, having spent a decade at home as a housewife, homemaker, whatever the hell that role is actually called. And also at that stage, I was coming up to 50. I realised fairly quickly that wasn't really that sexy as regards employers. They kind of didn't really. So I couldn't get a job. And I thought, OK, what am I going to do? And I thought, well, OK, I'm going to have to make work for myself. And if I'm doing that, I might as well try and do it doing something I do enjoy. I've always written. My previous incarnations, and as you say, I'm very old, started off.
Not in my world.
Not in your world. Started off as a travel agent. I then worked for a while teaching computer applications. I then went to work for a national charity as a public relations officer. I then did the decade as the housewife, house homeowner, or whatever. And so I've always written. So I thought writing and talking, if I could make that work. So I was only thinking the other night, I was sitting down. When I started that, I thought, okay, what'll I do first? I'll set up a blog so that I can kind of practice my writing, hone my skills, maybe begin to develop a little bit of an audience, see how things work out. So I set up a blog and I called it because, again, you know, jack of all trades, master of nothing in particular except life. I called it From My Kitchen Table. And I was struck last night. I was sitting at my kitchen table signing the pre-orders that were going out of my book. It took 10 years, but finally got there.
You dedicate the book to your mum.
Yeah.
And she was a huge figure in your life.
Huge.
It's not a given that your mother is, but you had a beautiful relationship with her.
I was really very lucky. And I do describe in the book, I grew up in a very male, masculine household because my dad, my mum, but I had three brothers, all of whom were younger than me. My grandfather, my paternal grandfather, came to live with us at one stage for a number of years. And when I was about eight, my uncle, my mother's brother, came to live with us. He had a learning disability. This was back in the 70s, like when, you know, people with learning disabilities weren't out and about, weren't in the community. I have to say that was a huge, like, I wasn't at all happy about that. But I was surrounded by men. And I think it was that that led to my mother and I developing a very close relationship. So she was my mammy first and foremost. But in lots of ways, we were like sisters. And as I got older, and I write about this in the book, I mean, her mothering was, I suppose, you know, it was a bit odd at times.
In what way?
Well, one of the things she decided when I was probably about 12, she always thought, till the day she died, God bless her, she thought I was a Philistine. But she thought my kind of classical education needed a little bit of assistance. And she was an opera buff, loved opera, loved ballet as well. So there was no opera coming to Dublin, but there was a ballet. I think there was the Irish Ballet Company's, one of their first productions of Swan Lake was on at the Gaiety. So she thought this would be a good thing for me to go to. So I was happy out. The two of us went off to the ballet. I quite enjoyed it and I thought it was very nice. But unfortunately, Dublin ran out of classical things to go to straight after that. But what did happen was, now this was the 70s, you'll remember this, which came first, Jesus Christ Superstar was put on in Dublin.
Or Joseph and his amazing
technical. That was after. Jesus Christ was first. And I remember there was a big outcry. The church weren't happy about it. There was protests about it. We went to see that and I mean, we both were blown away. Then we went, Joseph and his Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat seemed to be on every couple of weeks in Dublin back in the 70s. We went to see every time it was on. And so then that developed into, she kind of fell in love with the guy who played the Pharaoh in Joseph and his Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, who was a singer called Ciara Doherty from Northern Ireland. And he had a band.
From a distance, obviously.
Not really. No, my dad was at home. No, she was a groupie, God bless her. And my dad didn't know an awful lot of this. But so then he formed a band called the Dazzle Band. And then my mother thought this would be a great idea if me and her went around Dublin to these cabaret venues. I was 13. These were licensed premises. And we were going to see the Dazzle Band. And we did that for years. And I know my friends were a bit like, you're what? You're going out with your mom and that's you're going to these places.
That's not conventional.
No, it wasn't conventional. But that was my mother. She was not conventional, but she was, she was terrific. And we were friends, you know, always.
And she died in January.
Unfortunately she did. She was 86. Last couple of years weren't easy. And unfortunately she died quite quickly in the end in January. So, yeah. But she, see, I know she's all around. She's all through the book.
And she'd be so proud of you, wouldn't she?
Yeah, she would.
The book, because it's something you've been threatening to do for a long time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, my mother started, and not a lot of people knew this about her, but in the 70s, she was a housewife at home as well, because she did go back to work then. So she, again, was quite ahead of her time. But before she went back to work, she wrote a couple of short stories. And I was only remembering that the other day. She wrote a couple of short stories that were published in Women's Way. And I remember my father, after the first one, wasn't entirely happy because he thought people might think that, although these were fiction, that it was some reflection on us. So she wrote under her mother's maiden name.
Why were they? Were they?
What? They weren't racy or anything at all. No, but my father was a very conservative man, civil servant, four right angles, lovely, steady as a rock, but like wasn't keen on her kind of putting herself out there or her writing out there. So she wrote under her mother's maiden name. Yeah. But she would have loved this book. Yeah, she would have.
So your dad was a strong man, but there's a theme running through the book, and you may not have recognised it.
Okay.
But I recognise it as a man.
Okay, good.
Because your target audience are women.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And so I'm again a bit of an interloper in here. but you're not a big fan of men in general.
No, that's not fair. I have gone through phases.
Right.
Okay. I have gone through phases. Yeah. Of not being, and I'm very honest about that in the book. I mean, I did go through quite a long phase of not having a very high opinion of men, and. You know, I think obviously my life experience would have probably informed some of that. Like I grew up at a time when, you know, it was the second wave of feminism. Women were still kind of having to ask their husband's permission to go and open bank accounts, you know, couldn't get contraception. There was so much rubbish around in women's lives. And then when I was in the 80s, when I was 25, I became pregnant and there wasn't the guy wasn't around. So I was on my Sweeney Todd. And that really cemented a hatred. And it wasn't really, I mean, at the time, I would have said, yeah, it was kind of like I hated all men. But it was really the patriarchy that I hated. And there was, I came smack up against the judgment. I can remember listening. It seemed to be every other week on the radio and on television, there were debates about these unmarried mothers, as we were called then. And this was around the time that the allowance, because we joined the EU or the EC, as it was.
1973
wasn't
there.
So things had started to loosen up a little bit. Now, this was 1987. But still, we'd still a long way to go in changing hearts and minds. And there was an awful lot of judgment. The unmarried mother's allowance, in inverted commas, was brought in.
And that's the only reason you had a child in the first place, to get your hands on the allowance.
Exactly. That was exactly the conversations. That all of these young ones would go out and get pregnant just in order to have the unmarried mother's allowance. So there was so much of that. It's laughable now. But at the time, and even though in my logical brain, I could logical that out and go, that's nonsense. But when you keep hearing that, you do, it kind of by osmosis, you do take it in. And I had a light bulb moment. I remember at my daughter's 21st, when I suddenly sat there and went, she's actually grand. She's actually fine. Because the other thing that was said back then was that the children of these unmarried mothers would all be delinquent because they'd no fathers in their lives. They'd no male role models. So they'd all be delinquent. And I suddenly thought, well, no, they're not. And she's fine. And I have still to this day, I have just so much respect for anybody who's parenting alone. I mean, it is still mainly women, but I think doing it on your own, parenting is tough. Doing it on your own is double tough. Mm. And I think single parents are heroes.
And of course, all of these things made you who you are. Like that's life, I suppose.
The bullshit.
The reason I say that is because you encourage your readers to go back over their lives.
Yes.
And draw on their experiences.
Yes.
Because that's, and we don't, as a society, you reckon we don't draw on the wisdom of older people enough.
Absolutely. And I think particularly older women. And I think that is a very important message of the book. I think very often as women, and I put myself, you know, until I started this project, I would have believed this too. You kind of look at your life and go, I didn't do anything particularly like exciting or brilliant or clever or, you know, I haven't created anything. I haven't smashed through a glass ceiling. I didn't get to the top of my job. And you kind of think, therefore, my opinions and my experience and all of that isn't worth anything. Mm. And my point is that it's so worth something. Your life experience is what gives you wisdom. You can't learn wisdom out of a book. You can't go to college and come out wise. You can come out knowing stuff, but that doesn't make you wise. Mm. What makes you wise is your lived experience. And I think particularly for women, we're very good at talking amongst ourselves. In other words, you know, within a women's group, within a safe space. So women will talk about their lives and how they're, and we're very interested in each other's lives and in how other women are managing whatever it is, you know, depending on what stage of life we're at. What we're not great at as women, I don't think, is taking those conversations out into a wider audience. For example, when I was at home for the 10 years I was at home with my kids, and I know this is an experience which will, I'm sure, resonate with a lot of listeners. I remember being at social events when somebody, you know, and you're making small talk and you're holding your glass of wine and somebody'd say, what do you do, Barbara? And I didn't know what I did. I was like, I couldn't say housewife because I thought I'm not married to my house. That's ridiculous. I didn't know what to call myself. And I generally then went back to, but I used to be.
Yes.
And I think that that's, you know, we need to change all the narrative.
It's a tough
so
one,
much
though.
In
it's
there.
A tough one, isn't it?
It is. Well, it's a tough one because there's no, first of all, there's no decent title for it. You know, housewife is a really demeaning kind of title.
But say, for example, right, so I witnessed this at home, that Jenny, we have the luxury that Jenny's able to stay at home.
Yes.
And I witnessed the positive effect it has on our children.
Yes.
But even by saying that, the implication is that if Jenny went out to work, it would have a negative effect on our children. That's, do you see what I'm saying?
I do see what you're saying. And I think that's really, really interesting. And I do think we need to be more honest around all of that. I had the luxury of being at home with my children for a decade. It started out as just a year. I said, I'll take a year off. When the third child was born, I just felt I couldn't juggle anymore. And my husband is self-employed. So he said, I'll work all the hours. You do all the hours. And that's what happened. We went into the, you know, the real stereotypical gendered roles. I was at home. Yeah. He went out and caught the bacon and he brought it home and I cooked it. And that worked for us. And, it, you know, I think it was beneficial for the children. I also think it was hugely beneficial for me as a person. But I think we need to change the conversation around that in society because that's not seen as being important. And in the same way as that people who work in childcare facilities, for example, looking after our children, if you do choose to go to work, are paid really lowly and are not respected for what they do. It's not seen as a job that's of any importance. Ditto with people, and again, they're mainly women, who work in our nursing homes, looking after our older people. Anybody in a caring role, it's kind of seen as a not really important job.
No, I think it's 75-80% of people in caring roles are women.
Those jobs aren't valued. And they're hugely important, but the work involved in caring isn't valued. And I think that's where we need to start the change. I left... the world of paid work in 2001. And I remember at that time meeting a lot of women in different, you know, I worked for charity, but in the different companies that I would have been, so you know, in touch with, looking at me and going, you're very lucky. I wish I could do that. Uh-huh. And I think there is a fear among women that we can't say, I actually want to stay at home with my kids, or men. They've always had that problem.
Forever. Like I've been talking on radio now for over 20 years and from early on, the conversation about childcare in this country and the lack of decent, affordable childcare was on the agenda.
And nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. And it starts with respecting the people who do the work and valuing it as proper work and paying it as such. And it should be state subsidised. It's terribly unfair. You know, I know because, you know, you referred to my daughter in Australia earlier and she's two kids. And I was down there a few weeks ago and I'm seeing firsthand how little has changed from the time that I was doing it, trying, both of us working, two small kids, all that's such a lot of pressure. And it's so tough. It's really tough. And I think women and men, but again, women in particular, find it hard to say that because in somehow it feels like you're letting down the sisterhood. If you say that, if you say this is actually really hard, or if you say that in my heart, I'd actually like to take some time out and I'd like to be at home with my children. Well, and the problem is it's gendered. That should be allowed to be said by either party, either the father or the mother. And it should be seen as a perfectly relevant choice and a perfectly logical thing to want to do.
I read a book, Head, Hand, Heart. And that's it's a big thick book, but that's the thesis of it is that we don't value the caring roles enough at all.
We don't.
Now, you talk an awful lot about your height and your weight and your self image throughout the book. So you're 6 foot.
Yeah.
And you hit 6 foot when you were in your teenage years. Yeah. And that was something else, was it?
It was something else. Yeah. I mean, it was something else. And I have a daughter now. My youngest daughter now is 6'2".
What?
And I was saying to her the other day, my 6 foot back in the 70s is equal probably to your 6'2". You know, we've all got taller. So, yeah, six foot. No, you didn't. No, you missed that one.
Yeah, sorry.
But yeah, being 6 foot when I was a teenager. And I think it certainly made me stand out. I mean, I couldn't get into trouble in school because I'd be caught before anybody else were caught. I couldn't talk in school because I'd be caught and I'd be seen to be talking. Yeah. So there was, you learned all that fairly early on.
And the references to you, what like?
The references to me were, you're big.
Yes.
And I hated that, always hated that. It's also, I was educated by the nuns. nuns, and it wasn't just the nuns, it was the lay teachers as well. They equated height with strength. Uh-huh. So I got to carry everything. So in those days, there was big audiovisual equipment that had to be rolled around on trolleys, and I was the one always sent get the audiovisual.
Barbara Scully will do
Barbara
that.
Muscles over there, even though, like, I was totally not sporty.
And then with reference to your weight, sure, you can carry it.
Can carry the bit of extra weight. You know, people say all kinds of daft things to you. Oh, you could be a model just because you're tall. I'm like, I'm not built like a model. I was never built like a model. Right. Except for when I was probably about 14, I got lanky for a while, and that was maybe I could.
There was a window of opportunity.
But
there.
And they say, oh, you can carry, you know, you'd say, I've put on a bit of weight. You can carry it, you're grand.
Yeah, I'm interested to talk to you about your weight. Mm. And the fact that you were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes in 2019.
I was.
And there's a lot about this in the book, and it's really interesting. I suppose the main message out of it is that you can reverse it.
You can.
And you have.
Yes. But also, I got into trouble myself. I mean, type 2 diabetes is the one you kind of tend to give to yourself because your diet isn't right, and mainly in my case, because I wasn't moving. And I made an absolute kind of virtue out of the fact that I hated sport. I hate moving. I hate exercise. I saw myself as, like, you know, mama bear sitting at home hibernating. Yeah, I'm a bit lardy. I don't care.
Right.
Until suddenly I was
made
to. So
with the diagnosis of type 2 diabetes, you say in the book, came guilt.
Oh, yeah. Huge guilt. Shame. Yeah, both of those.
Because
I did it to myself.
Right.
I can't blame anybody else. It wasn't just like, you know, a lot of, diseases that you can develop, you know, are just random. You know, if you'd get cancer, chances are
unlucky,
it's just a random thing. But type 2 diabetes, especially in my case, wasn't random. I had a family history of it. My father developed type 2 when he was in his 50s. And I developed it because my lifestyle was very unhealthy. And I got away, as my doctor said the day he gave me the diagnosis, you get away with it until you stop getting away with it.
Right.
And I stopped getting away with it.
Yeah.
And I also didn't understand the relationship between, because I was thinking, I mean, I have a bit of a sweet tooth and I've got a larger sweet tooth as I got older. And I like to bake. So there was that. But there was also the fact that I've always loved carbohydrates. And I was eating, and again, this comes, I lay
rice,
the blame for this at my
potatoes.
Brother's. Yeah, because I grew up in a house where they all were like savages, and I then kind of copied them. So too much pasta, too much rice, too much potatoes. And I had to learn to measure.
So you
measure it out.
Then you had to reconcile this body positivity, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
With your health.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think about that now? Because I think that's a really important discussion to have.
It is, yeah, because I'm all for body positivity. I'm the mother of daughters. I know that girls from the time we're very young, we see ourselves as the sum of our parts. We get very self-critical. We understand that the world will judge us on how we look from the time we're very, very young. But I think we also have to realise, particularly as we get older, that there is a difference between, you know, how your body is shaped, whether you're overweight or fat, and fitness. I am not skinny. I am still technically, I'm still overweight, but I'm fit. I'm fitter now, way fitter than I was in 2019. And that's the difference.
Okay. You see, we sow the seeds of that early on.
Yeah, very early on.
Yeah. So how do we get that message out there? Because if people are afraid to say anything, because they offend people.
Yeah.
Because,
well, I think people, you know, I think how I look is nobody's business except my own. So I don't think any of us have the right to judge anybody else or lecture anybody else on how they look and make it personal to that person. I think that's absolutely a no-no.
Yeah.
But I do think we've got to change a couple of things. And again, I say this as the mother of daughters, that whole BMI thing that doctors still use is, and I'm not a scientist and I'm not a medic, this is again my life experience and my wisdom, is a load of old
bananas.
Yeah,
well, let's get away from that, because I'm interested in the bigger thing, you know, the bigger picture.
Pardon the pun.
But like, if you can't discuss anything about somebody's weight, then how can we get the message
across?
But
what I'm trying to say is, it's not necessarily about weight. It's about your fitness. Do you get breathless when you're walking a few feet? Do you get breathless? You know, can you go up a stairs? Or are you struggling to go up a stairs and will you always take the lift?
Yeah.
They're the kind of markers you need to look at. It doesn't matter how.
But you know now, and you say it in the book, Barbara, that there is a relationship between your health and your weight.
Oh, there is, but it makes it easier to be fit, obviously, if you're not carrying an awful lot of excess weight. But what I'm saying is, weight can look different on everybody.
Yes,
so you
can.
Can't look
can.
At somebody and decide whether
no,
they're
I know,
overweight
I know.
Or not.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the key marker is fitness. I don't care if you bulge out of your bits, or, you know, you have a bit of a tummy, or you've got wobbly legs, or you've got whatever, whatever. But I think you do. And as you get, you will get away with it when you're younger. But as you get older, your fitness is what is really important.
Quote your doctor.
Sorry?
You get away with
you
it.
You get away with it until you stop getting away with it. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Wise Up, Power Wisdom and the Older Woman, Barbara Scully. And you are, it's available in Gutter Bookshops.
The Gutter Bookshop will have it from this week, from next week. It's available on my website, which is barbarascully.com.
With three A's.
With what?
Three A's. I thought there was an E in the middle of Barbara. You're no. Barbara has three A's.
B-A or B-A or... God, I thought my name was spelled wrong. On no. But, you're after giving me a heart attack.
No, but Barbara...
Bada-bada.
B-A or B-E-R-A.
No, B-A or B-A-R-A.
Right, there you go. It's never spelled with an E, isn't it?
No.
Right, not your name, but the other Barbara's spelled
with an E. No, we all spell it B-A or B-A-R, unless you're Oscailge and then you're B-A-I or B-R-E. But I never heard of Barbara. Do you know what you're thinking? Hanna-Barbera. No, do you know who made the cartoons?
I think that's what you're thinking. Barbara Scully, spelled with three A's, in my world is odd. But it's not in your world. And
not
your
at
name.
All. Yeah. Can I also mention the fact that I will be at Listowel for Writers Week as well on the 3rd of June. I'll be in Ballybunion for the Women in Media event on the 4th of June. And I'll be in Dorky Book Festival on the 18th of June. And I'd love to talk to women. I'd love to talk to men as well, because we need to take the conversation to men. But obviously, I'd love to talk to women about all of this.
Well, good luck with all of that.
Congratulations
on the book. Thanks,
Thank
Barbara.
You.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gramal, good morning. Thank you very much. 51551 RayDarcy.ie. Barbara is always three A's, Ray, except for Barbara Streisand, who has two and no E, says Caroline in Ringsend. That's spelled B-A-R-B-R-A. Tell that lady on your show, Barbara Scully, she's a breath of fresh air, a father of five daughters. I'd be so proud if any of them turned out like her. Well done. And I stayed at home to raise three children, says somebody else. The youngest has just finished 4 years in college, but people look down on me for not having a job. I worked every day of my life without pay, and I do it again. And Claire says, I love Barbara and I've ordered her book. Can't wait to read it. However, while single parents are heroes, they rarely do it alone. There's usually a life raft of family around to help. Even Barbara herself flies across continents to help her daughter. No parent thrives without support. This one certainly isn't. And she does say that in the book. Your guest is making great points there. Stay-at-home mums are very valuable to society and not given the proper respect, in my opinion, says Bernard. And Barbara is a legend. From a mum of an 18-month-old trying to balance my career with raising my daughter to be a strong, amazing person. We must do better for us, but for those coming up behind us as well. Love you, Barbara. That's Orla. And for the title housewife, my mother used to call herself a domestic engineer, if anyone ever asked, says Killian. And on the Clash of the ash been replaced by the bamboo. So how will the phrase Clash of the Ash be replaced? The crack of the panda snack, says somebody. Much ado about bamboo, says Paul. And finally, how about the Clash of the Grass, says Chlorine. So thanks for all those suggestions. We'll pass them on to Ger Canning and Marty Morrissey. But right now, it's time for Reeling in the Ears. Whoop. Yep, we've two quizzers standing by and three clips each for them and a prize. And this week's prize is a two-night break for two people in the Foda Island Resort. It's a five-star resort, fodaisland.ie. Loads of things to do down there. There's golf, there's swimming pool, there's a spa, there's loads of walks. And you're very close to Cork City, which has a lot to offer as well. Fodaisland.ie. Good afternoon, Les Maguire.
Good afternoon, Ray. How are you?
Les, short for Leslie.
Well, it's actually short for Leslie Ann, but like three syllables, I just go with Les.
Right. Okay. Leslie Ann. So you're L.A. Maguire. L.A. Maguire.
Yeah,
they're
initials. Some people call me L.A. actually.
Do they? Oh, right.
They do, yeah.
Now, you need to breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth. You've had a very stressful day, Les.
Yeah, I have, to be honest. Now, I haven't been the greatest, so I think my luck might be changed. According to one of your producers, my luck has changed.
Right,
so
okay. Well, you're on here now. At least you won't go away empty-handed. The least you'll get is two mugs. So what happened to you today, Les?
Oh, look, where do I start? Okay, so I had an incident with my car. I went over a ramp a little bit too quickly.
Right.
And the car was grand after that for a couple of days, and then it started to get kind of bouncy in the back. So I had the mobile mechanic come. He does all my service, and so I trust him like that. He wouldn't rip me off or anything. Anyway, he came, run the diagnostics on it, and said, I need a new compressor. right, which is a lot of money.
Where what's so, what does the compressor do when it's at home?
Yeah, so the compressor, I know a lot about this now, right?
Yeah.
The compressor, because it's an air suspension, it puts the air into the suspension.
Ah, yes, right.
You with me?
Yeah, so your suspension is gone.
So the suspension went in the back of the car and it started to drive a bit like a tractor.
Right, okay,
I
not
just
good.
Got it home in the driveway and your man ran the diagnostics and he says new compressor. But on the upside, so it was taken away this morning by a lovely guy called Stephen from the AA.
Right, okay.
I gave him the sequence of events. He doesn't think it's the compressor.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm waiting for the garage to call me.
Right, because the compressor is major, but Stephen from the AA thinks it might be something different. Right.
He thinks it's the airbags that hold the air that goes into the suspension. I don't know now. It's getting very technical.
I didn't know there were airbags. I thought
neither
they were...
Neither did I.
Okay, well, fingers crossed for you. Fingers crossed for you. How are you on the quiz? Do you listen regularly?
I do listen to it regularly. I've never called in for a competition in my life, but I do really need these two nights in Cork.
All right.
I need two nights in Cork in general.
Pressure. You're up against Emma Byrne, who's in Tremorne, County Waterford. How are you doing, Emma?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're a primary school teacher.
Yes, I am.
What class do you teach?
Third at the moment, Ray.
In which school?
In presentation. And right. They're a lovely bunch of little kids if they're listening. Hi.
Yeah. So what are around eight, is it?
No, 9 and 10.
9 and 10,
mostly.
Okay, right,
yeah.
Okay, right, yeah. And do they get giddy around this time of the year? I know it's you've still about 5 weeks to go, but, you know, the days are longer, the weather's good, they're looking out the window, all that sort of thing.
Of course, and they want to be outside and they're all, you know, school trips and stuff are coming up and some of them tend to go missing as well this time of year and holidays.
Right.
So the others want to be out then.
Yeah. And like, you're in Tremor, so you don't need to go anywhere on a school trip, do you? Or where do you go?
Oh, well, myself, no.
No, the school. Is there a school tour planned?
Yeah, I think they're going to, well, we better not make it 100%.
Yes,
but
it's a surprise.
I'll just say some little farm and some historical site down Wexford Way.
That's vague enough. Right. Nothing has been confirmed. That's fair enough.
No, they'll have the bags packed and the lunch made if I say anymore.
Okay, right. And you're doing a bit of work for your granny Emily. What's the story there?
She's my gran. I live with her, right? And I've gone to look after her, but she looks after me. And she had a hip replacement, so she's still not home yet for a few weeks.
Okay.
And I just said I give the place a little freshen up.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And you know what? She either won't notice it or I'll have done it wrong.
Yeah. Right. I know she will. She'll appreciate that. That's a lovely gesture.
I know. Looking forward to getting her home now. You've missed the crack.
Yeah. Right. So you know the idea, Les and Emma. Three clips each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. Go for a shorter clip, you get 2 points. Whoever gets most points is the winner. If it's a draw on points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Good luck, Les.
Thanks a million, Emma.
Now, Les, to you then. The year is 2007, 15 years ago. And we're starting at the movies. Would you like a long clip, Les, or a short clip, Les?
I'm going to go short.
Short, okay. An animated movie that saw a famous fictional American family make it to the big screen. And here is your short clip.
How did the pig tracks get on the ceiling?
Spider pig.
Simpsons.
It is Simpsons. Simpsons movie. Well done. 2 points there. And for you, Emma, another animated movie. And this one's about... Oh, yeah. I was going to go... Sorry. Are you going long or short?
Short, right.
Short. Okay. I'll start again then on the question. It's another animated movie about a rodent with cooking skills. It was a big hit in 2007. Can you name it? Here is your short clip.
And what belief is that, Mademoiselle Tattoo?
Anyone can cook.
I think that might be the cook and rat, Ratatouille.
Yes, it is. Well done. It's about a young rat who dreams of becoming a chef, and you get 2 points. Okay, back to you, Les Maguire. Still in 2007. It's music this time. Long or short?
I'll have to go short. We're even, Stephen. So.
Yeah, okay. It's another... this is a song that reached the top of the Irish charts in 2007. Can you name the song or the singer? Here's your short clip.
Do I attract you? Do I repulse you with my queasy smile?
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry I went short now. Oh, my goodness.
Can I change my mind short? Long?
No, you can't.
No. And you can't play it again?
No.
No.
You know the rules. No ideas, no. Any idea at all? Song or singer?
No, I'm sorry, Ray.
No. It's Grace Kelly by Mika. And coincidentally, Mika was one of the presenters, one of the three presenters at this year's Eurovision
That's
Song
right.
Contest. Yes, yeah. Okay, nothing there. Don't fret. You still have 2 points. To you, Emma, then. Music from 2007. Do you want long or short?
Short, please.
Short, okay. This song reached the top of the Irish charts. Can you name the song or the singer? Here we go. Short clip. You have my heart.
Rihanna.
Yes, it is. Rihanna, Umbrella. Well done. So you're on 4 now. Les, you're on 2. So you don't have much choice here for your final question. You sort of have to go short, don't you?
Okay, let's go.
Yeah, and you have to hope that Emma might falter on her last question.
No.
So it's news and current affairs. I know you wouldn't wish that on anybody. News and current affairs, 2007. This man announced he was stepping down after 10 years as Prime Minister and 13 years as UK Labour leader. Can you name him? And here's your short clip.
Occasionally, the expectations were too high. You should have lowered them.
Who was that?
Tony Blair.
It was Tony Blair. Well done. You get 2 points. You're on 4. You can't do any more. Emma, you're on 4 as well, but you do have a question in hand. So if you get anything from this, you're today's winner.
I may go along.
You're going to go along, okay.
Yeah, please.
So in that year, 2007, this politician declared his candidacy for the President of the United States of America. Can you name him? And here is your long clip.
That's why this campaign can't only be about me. It must be about us. It must be about what we can do together.
Who's that?
God, I'm between two. Did you say he finished, Ray, or he started it?
He declared his candidacy for President of the United States of America. Who's that? I need an answer from you.
I think it's I'm just going to have to go with who I think it is.
Yeah, go with it. Go on.
It's either Bush or Obama. Oh, Bush, I don't know.
Bush is your answer, is it?
I'll have to, Ray, I think.
Yeah, so. It's the other one, Barack Obama. It's Barack Obama. There you go. He went on to become the Democratic candidate in 2008 and won that election, beating the Republican candidate John McCain. Okay, so it's 4-4. There you go. We're down to a tiebreak question. I hate them, but that's the way it goes. So we asked you this question before you went on air, and whoever answers closest to the correct answer is today's winner. Okay, according to Google Maps, how long would it take you to drive from Castlebar in County Mayo to Wexford Town in County Wexford? Les Maguire, what was your guess?
I said 3 hours 15.
3 hours and 15 minutes, okay. And what about you, Emma Byrne?
I think I said 4 hours and 10.
You did say 4 hours and 10. And the correct answer is 4 hours and 5 minutes. So, Emma, you're today's winner.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Les. That's okay. That's
well, okay. Les, you're going to get 2 Radar Show mugs, and I hope that the car isn't as bad as was first thought, and everything works out for you. And thanks so much for ringing in today. Mind yourself, Les.
Thanks very much.
Bye
thanks
now.
Emma.
Bye bye. Emma Byrne, you're off to the Fota Island Resort. And you can find out what's in store for you. And there's a lot in store for you there at fotaisland.ie.
Really fantastic.
Well
and
done, Emma.
My sister's friend works in Centre in Dunmore. I'll get her to give you a bigger ice cream the next time.
That's very kind of you, Emma. Thank you very much.
Enjoy. Thanks
See you
so
now.
Much.
Bye, bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, on Monday the 6th of June, there's a very special afternoon concert in St Mary's Pro Cathedral in aid of Peter McVerry's Homeless Trust and Dogs Aid Animal Rescue. Linda Martin will be emceeing and Daniel O'Donnell will be performing with the Sean Gilligan Hallelujah Gospel Choir. And Daniel is on the line now. Good afternoon, Daniel.
Hello, Ray. How are you doing?
Good. And you, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, fine.
I just worked it out there. Monday the 6th is the bank holiday Monday.
That's right, yes. It's a It's an afternoon concert. That's why I suggested to do an afternoon concert, because it was the bank holiday. So hopefully it'll work out okay.
Have you performed in St. Mary's Pro Cathedral before, Daniel?
No, never. I've been to Mass there a few times, but never, never did any singing there. So looking forward to it. It's always nice to get the opportunity to do shows like this one. I mean, obviously, it's very different to a regular show, because the music is all inspirational, you know, and some hymns and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I enjoy it very much. I mean, obviously, like a lot of people, I sang in the choir at home from when I was very young, and recorded a number of albums of inspirational music. So it's nice to get the chance to sing them in this setting, because it's just very special.
And then you have the gospel choir, which as well.
Looking forward to that too.
Yeah.
I've never sung with them either, so looking forward. They're going to, you know, join us in a number of songs. And then I have my own band, and, you know, the backing singers as well. They'll be there too.
And you probably haven't the whole set list sort of confirmed yet, but give us a taster to whet our listeners' appetites.
We'll sing some of the hymns that people, I suppose, Lady of Knock and Here I Am, Lord, you know, songs like that. We'll sing some gospel songs, you know, like Will the Circle Be Unbroken, On the Wings of a Dove.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
it's kind of, it's a lot of songs that people will know. I'm sure One Day at a Time, we'll get a go. It'll be a show that people will be able to join in into, you know, that I'm hoping that people will recognise a lot of the music and sing along with it.
And there's a unique acoustic in churches and cathedrals, isn't there?
Absolutely, very special. There's something just different about singing in the chapel, anywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just think it's very, very special to get the opportunity. And to sing in the Pro Cathedral, of course, is a great honour too.
Yeah.
And so I'm really looking forward to
it. So that's June the 6th. And eventbrite.ie for tickets there. And the advice from everybody who knows is to book as early as you can, because they're going to go very quickly. The last time we spoke to you, Daniel, you had little Archie there. You were babysitting him and he was entertaining us.
I know.
are you on babysitting duties today?
No, I'm not. I'm not on my own today.
Right, okay.
But I was talking to him not long ago. I was talking to Siobhan, and he was in the back of the car. He was shouting out to me. You know, he's a great wee man.
Yeah. So you have three grandchildren, Olivia, Archie and Luke. And grandchildren change everything, don't they?
Well, you know, they do. I mean, they bring an awful lot of joy. And I'm lucky, I suppose, I get the chance to spend a good bit of time with them. I mean, this concert, I haven't done any shows in Ireland at all since lockdown, you know,
right.
Since this is the beginning of it now when we start. Of course, our proper tour starts in Killarney at the end of August. We have four nights at the INEC, and, you know, looking forward to that too. That's just kind of back on the road proper. But, you know, The opportunity to spend time with them is very important too. Suppose I was cutting down before the pandemic hit, and I was deciding, you know, I must get a bit more time off, and that's what I'm doing, you know. So I get a good bit of time in July. I'm hoping to go to oh dear. Are you still there with me?
I am. No, still with you there, and you're coming in loudly and clearly. Yeah,
that's great. I see Magella trying to phone me here.
Okay,
so I don't even know how to.
Can you include her in the chat? I'd love to chat to her. I don't think she could come on. No.
But anyway,
there's always something going on in your life, Daniel. That's great. I love that.
I know. She's checking up on me. So I just. You know, the opportunity to be able to have the balance, you know. So when we start in August in Killarney, of course, we go on to November. But my kind of outlook is that I will take more time off and have the opportunity to spend with the grandchildren.
Isn't that
great?
We're going
to Tenerife in July. I'm going with them as the babysitter, I suppose, really.
Yeah, so you let Siobhan and her husband out. That's great.
I will. There's three of them. So There's the baby's only just coming up a year in October, and Olivia will be 7 in August, and then Archie is 4.
Right.
He's just started cycling without stabilisers. Oh,
brilliant.
That's
a big moment. That's a big moment. That is a big...
Yeah.
And 4 is quite young. Well done to Archie.
Oh, I know. She graduated to a bit bigger bike, and he inherited it.
And listen, I saw the pictures and the videos of you at the top of Croagh Patrick with Charlie Bird, and you became a sort of an MC at the top there. Was that planned?
Well, not really. I mean, not prior to it anyway. As I was leaving the bottom, Father Charlie, who's from the parish down there, said to me, you'll take charge up at the top and do, you know, MC. And I says, will I? And he said, yeah. So he told me a few things that he wanted to happen or not happen. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I kind of just said, okay, that'll be fine. But, you know, the whole experience with Charlie was incredible. You know, certainly been on top of the mountain, but the lead up to it, the atmosphere, I don't know that, you know, I've been involved in anything that united the country like Charlie's Climb.
Mm.
It was quite amazing that, you know, I was getting messages from people at home saying they were climbing Errigal and they were going up Muckish, and there was people, you know, climbing mountains in Wicklow and Tipperary and everywhere, you know. And then there was an amount of people went up Croagh Patrick, and I remember standing at the bottom, and you can get a fairly good view of a good part of the mountain, and to see all the people walking was amazing. And then when we eventually arrived at the top, and when Charlie got up to the top, it was unbelievable, just the feeling that was there. You know, and the atmosphere, and, you know, he obviously addressed the people, and we sang a few songs, and then Vicky, feeling out of the blue, came on the phone. There were friends of hers there, and we were able to put her on loudspeaker on the phone, and it was just a moment in time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose, I'm sure a lot of people felt the same, both Charlie and Vicky, and you know, they've had terrible diagnosis, both of them, and yet in their illness they're able to do such positive things. Mm. It's quite incredible, and was an honor for me to be a small part of that day in Croagh Patrick with Charlie and with Claire and with all of the people.
Amazing people. And from your description there, the love and the outpouring of affection and love for Vicky and Charlie was palpable. Obviously, you could feel it. You could.
Oh, God, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible, yes. It was amazing.
Yeah. And what condolences. I spotted that Joe Collum, who people probably won't know, but was a huge part of your life, died over the weekend, was it?
Yes, we just had his funeral yesterday.
Yeah.
Joe joined me. He was from Donegal, but he lived here in Dublin. And Joe travelled with me. He drove me, started working with me in 1987. And he then got ill in 2008. He had cancer diagnosis. And he went through treatment and beat the cancer, but it had a terrible effect on, I suppose, his quality of life after that. Although he did come back and worked with me for a while after that again. But even so, we were in contact all the time, and he died very suddenly last week. He got ill, and over a few days he was gone. And he was just a huge part of my life. Last year in September, Ronnie, who played the accordion in the band, passed away.
Ah.
And he had been with me from 1984 up until 2016. And Joe, of course, was nearly 30 years as well. So it's a huge loss to, you know, for somebody like that to go.
Yeah.
And, You know, it was more. There were more than work colleagues.
That's what I was going to say next, because that bond, it isn't just professional. It's about trust and friendship.
Absolutely, yes.
And you feeling completely safe and secure in their company.
Absolutely. And, you know, Joe and myself, I was just saying yesterday, you know, Joe and I spent more time together. We were in the car together. You know, we traveled the world together. He drove me everywhere for 25 years.
Right.
And he'll never be forgotten. Tomorrow he would have been 68.
Right.
And a young man.
It's that knowing when somebody like yourself, Daniel, wants to chat or doesn't want to chat.
Yes, he knew exactly. Yeah. He knew me better than I knew myself. And, you know, ironically, Joe worked with Linda Martin too.
Uh-huh.
And a number of years ago, Joe took me in. We went up and behind the iron somewhere, and I had pictures taken with two of Linda's dogs. She was getting, and you know, publicity for the great work that she does too. And, you know, the last time I was speaking to him, he says, you're doing a concert for Linda at last.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I am. I said, we're doing one for Linda's charity and you know, Father McFerry. And, you know, so he was pleased about that. And, you know, when I was talking to Linda briefly yesterday at the funeral, you know, and I was thinking, isn't it amazing, you know, the different, he worked with Dickie Rock, he worked with the Cotton Mill Boys, he was involved, a great friend of Ronan Collins.
He'd be missed, sadly missed.
You know, so obviously we'll never forget him.
No, and that mentioned there, the fact that you're finally doing the concert with Linda, and that concert is in St. Mary's Pro Cathedral on June 6th, and as you say, it's for Peter McFerry Homeless Trust and Dogs Aid Animal Rescue, which is a charity that's very close to Linda's heart. Daniel, mind yourself. Great talking to you.
Thanks a million, Ray, and thanks for the opportunity. And hopefully, we'll see as many as can be on the 6th of June.
Right, Eventbrite. That's it from us. Cormac and John Cook are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening. There you go.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.